This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the March 30th, 2009 Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut podcast. Brought to you weekly in partnership with the Cornell Turfgrass program and the New York State Turfgrass Association. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Turfgrass Extension Specialist and Associate Professor of Horticulture here at Cornell University. Okay, this stage of the season here in the end of March, the application window for annual bluegrass seedhead suppression, particularly for those interested in suppressing with proxy primo combinations, that window's beginning to open in the southern part of the region, and we expect probably by the end of the coming week that we will have entered that window in the New York City and Long Island area. Now, in the sports turf area, in the sports turf arena, many of the sports turf managers are talking about not being able to get their fields to bed properly the past fall. The winter came on early. Conditions were not conducive to work in the fields heading into the wintertime, and therefore a lot of them are not coming out of the winter into the spring in ideal condition. And so there are a couple of things we'll talk about in a minute that are likely to help with that. Now, the lawn care folks obviously are actively involved in cleaning things up from the winter as well. And a couple of things we've been hearing about is that many of them have begun to notice that those that took advantage of the late season, late October, possibly applications of broadleaf herbicides, particularly any broadleaf herbicides that contained triclopyr, probably were very effective in providing control of very hard to control weeds, especially things like ground ivy. A number of reports have come out for people who have tried to, in fact, control ground ivy in the past, waited very late last season, make the application of combinations that included triclopyr, probably 2,4-D, dicamba and triclopyr, and have virtually seen no remnants of ground ivy there this spring. Now, as we look around the state, we go through our Cornell Cooperative Extension update. Many of our extension educators are noticing things going on. For example, we've seen some lawn rolling. Lots of reports of snow mold, seems to be already interest in some early season weed control. Many have noted that there's mold and vole problems throughout lawns in New York State. And soils are still slow to warm. Many of them have been wet, which of course wet soils in general are going to take longer to cool. And our weed update from Randy Prostek is at the University of Massachusetts is telling us that a lot of the winter annuals have already begun coming out, and we're starting to see them starting to green up. One of the things we're not noticing, or Randy's not noticing, is that, in fact, summer annuals, particularly early germinators like prostrate knotweed, are not germinating as rapidly this spring, as a result likely of the fairly cool conditions. Now, the update in the golf world from Dave Otis, our director of the USGA's Northeast region. Dave's talking about some winter injury that he noticed on greens in New Jersey, probably from crown hydration and suffocation, and that's kind of persisted north into New England and into southern Canada. This may, David suspects, caused many putting surfaces to be slow to be open this year. And I'd concur with what David's talking about here. I think one of the things we're seeing is that some guys are pushing these greens a little too quick, too soon, and there is a lot of risk associated with trying to push those greens this quickly, this soon, and it's the kind of thing that may set you up for further problems. Now, in particular, what I'd like to note is that many golf superintendents will come out and, in an effort to maybe get the greens going quickly and maybe even try to get some green speed quickly, they will immediately start to cut the putting surfaces down fairly rapidly. And there's certainly not something we'd recommend that you did at least not that aggressively. We wouldn't want you to be dropping the mowing heights down into the eighth of an inch range yet. We'd think that getting that low this quickly, particularly on surfaces that are not firm, and particularly if you have front weight biased fixed head mower, sorry about that, that would be a little bit more aggressive down pressure into the putting surface. That's likely to lead to some scalping or at least aggressive cutting. And one of the things we know for sure that happens consistently with aggressive cutting, and that is generally the regular and persistent onset of basal rod anthracnose. And certainly a lot of superintendents that may get concerned to go out and start spraying this early for basal rod anthracnose. My sense is that with a little bit of rolling, holding off the mowing for a while, you're likely to get through this period of time fairly easily. Now, one of the things I liked, I'm going to be doing this entire season because it's starting to not only become more popular from an environmental perspective, but certainly a lot of people are talking about economic sustainability. And from a sustainable turf perspective, we just had a meeting with a number of turf grass leaders throughout the state and discussed widely the interest in, you know, maybe trying to bring some definition and more regular mention of a sustainable turf grass program that any type of golf turf, sports turf, lawn turf manager could implement. So each week what I'll try to do is pass along a little tip that might be useful in helping you improve your sustainability. Now let's start out with a really simple definition of what is a sustainable turf program. The UN, in a fairly recent definition of the word sustainability, states simply meeting the needs of your current generation, of your existing generation, without compromising the needs of the future generations. And thereby suggesting that we really need to focus on minimizing our use of non-renewable resources, particularly fossil fuel-based resources like, you know, fertilizer, pesticides, and make a concerted effort to find ways to reduce mowing requirements. Now, the tip for this week really centers around some of my thinking these days about how the early spring is really about soil temperature. In the absence of soil temperature, even when the air warms, you just don't see the grasses surging like they will once that soil starts to warm up, particularly as it starts to warm up into the mid-50s. And what starts to happen when you get soil warming is you immediately begin to get some nitrogen release, likely stored in the soil or possibly from an application you made in the latter part of the season. Now, one way to deal with this, certainly the easy way to deal with this, is really not try to irrigate very early in the spring, allowing the soils to warm, recognizing that the drier they are, the warmer they'll be. Now, certainly we don't want you to, you know, allow the soils to desiccate, and it's very unlikely that's going to happen in the spring anyways, but focusing on trying to keep the soils on the drier side is one way to encourage warming. And of course, another thing to consider is maybe starting out, especially on lawn turf, but, you know, for golf turf managers, sports turf managers, maybe going in and cutting 20 to 30% lower without going into scalping, but cutting the brown tips off, getting into the canopy a little bit, and allowing some sun to penetrate into that canopy and, again, encourage soil warming. And then finally, maybe in high-value areas or high-traffic areas like soccer goal mouths or maybe even some wear areas on golf tees that might be exposed to full sun, that you'd consider using turf covers or turf blankets to accelerate the warming. Now, one of the things you want to be careful about there is if you're going to use turf blankets, and you're going to leave them on during the day. Obviously, you don't want the temperatures to rise so much. On a bright, sunny day, the temperatures can build fairly rapidly. You do want to get some soil warming. But I think what's really important is if you do get a bright, sunny day, you do get some warming during the day without the cover, that you consider covering the turf in the evening to hold the heat into the soil. One of the things we know is that that radiation cooling effect will happen in the cooling will happen in the evening, even though it's warmed up during the day, in the absence of some insulation like a cover, that warm temperature will come right back out of the ground and you'll lose a lot of what you've gained during the day. So by accelerating that warming, either by focusing on drying the soil a little, possibly covering the soil, maybe even dropping your mowing height a little bit, you could then avoid having to make an early season fertilizer application to get turf going early on, particularly if you had a fall-based or late season-based fertilizer application made. This will likely reduce your overall reliance on additional nitrogen. Now, in a sports turf area, Joanne Grudadori, our executive director of the Sports Turf Managers of New York, really talks a lot about, in the print edition, about assessing fields for play and kind of reiterates some of the things we said earlier about trying to get fields going in the spring. Cites an often cited comment that for every week you use the field during the springtime, you'll need about 2 to 3 weeks to recover. You know, when that turf isn't actively growing and you're imposing traffic on it, it really sets it back, and there's no amount of fertilizer or seed or management practice that's going to help you overcome that. So certainly you'd want to minimize traffic. And of course, this is an ideal time to move your athletes in a sports turf situation to the synthetic surfaces. And this is really one of the ideal uses for synthetic surfaces, is to get them on there at this time of the year. And as we often say, having a synthetic turf option at your facility will often lead to improved turf quality on your natural turf fields. Now, in closing, let me just talk to you about a mark your calendar piece here. This year, the Cornell University Turfgrass Program, in lieu of a formal field day in Ithaca only on one day, we're coming out as a team to three locations. One of them, of course, is in Ithaca. The other two are in Rochester and in Bethpage. And on June 24th, we'll be at the University of Rochester and at a local golf course as a team to walk and talk about the latest things you should be considering from a research perspective at the University of Rochester, where we can walk and talk and see the grounds and also visit the golf course, where we can talk about some of the latest management practices underway at some of the local golf courses. So mark your calendar in the Rochester area for June 24th. On July 15th, we'll be in Ithaca, walking and talking the Turfgrass Research Facility in a very informal but very informative fashion, where we'll be speaking about the research underway both at the Cornell Research Facility and at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Course here at Cornell University. Mark your calendar, July 15th in Ithaca. And then finally, August 12th at the Bethpage State Park in New York, on the heels, and I'm sure what will be a glorious U.S. Open in June on the Bethpage Black Course, we'll visit the Bethpage Green Course, site of the environmentally responsible research project that's been going on now, entering its ninth season under the directorship of Jennifer Grant and myself, where we've actively begun to develop reduced and non-chemical approaches to managing golf courses. And we've expanded some of the initial work from putting surfaces out into the fairway and the rough, and especially in the rough area, doing some unique fertilizer and weed control programs that might be useful for our lawn and landscape partners as well to come out and see that. So mark your calendar for August 12th in Bethpage, New York. DEC, GCSA, STMA credits will all be available. Thank you for joining us this week on the Cornell University Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, and I'll look forward to chatting with you next week.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.